Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
There are perhaps many aspects of our daily lives that we take for granted. Clean water, electricity, a professional police service, a court system. Amid the chaos of our everyday lives here in Australia, consider this for a moment. It's estimated that 4 billion people around the globe live outside the protection of any law. Throughout the developing world, fear of violence is part of everyday life for the poor. Right now, there are a team of lawyers, investigators, social workers, and other professionals at work in over 20 communities in the developing world, giving support to some 4 billion people without a voice. They're the International Justice Mission, and they've now opened up in Australia, headed up by Amber Hawkes. Amber joins us with Sam Innocencio, the Director of Operations for IJM in the Philippines. Amber, welcome. How did you come to work with IJM?
Well, I was working as a commercial lawyer in Sydney, and I just felt called by God to use my skills and my experience to serve the poor and the oppressed. And I came across this organization, International Justice Mission, and was just amazed at the work that they were doing. And in fact, joined them in 2006, first as a volunteer, and then to direct a legal team fighting cases of bonded labour slavery in India for a couple of years.
How does an Australian-trained legal practitioner find a way to gain leverage in a country where perhaps that legal system doesn't support our kind of advocacy?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's part of the reason that over 95% of our staff in the countries in which we work are nationals of that country. So they have the language, the context and the culture. They understand that best. But these countries, they're unlike ours because in our country, generally speaking, our justice system works to protect us from violence. But in these countries in which we work, the justice system isn't working. It's broken. And you put injustice in one end and you don't get justice out the other. Yeah. What you actually get is more injustice in many cases. And part of the reason for that is a lack of skill, lack of resources, and just sometimes a lack of will or corruption. And so that's the circumstance that you're working in and having to find ways to push cases through the system. But it is possible. And I think that's the beauty of IJM's work, that it's very hopeful that we've seen some amazing results.
Given that IJM is now set up in Australia, are we to understand from that there are Australians playing leading roles in the illicit sex trade?
It does exist in Australia. The extent to which it exists is a lot smaller here. I've worked also prosecuting cases of sex trafficking and child pornography in Australia. There have been cases that we have worked on, quite a few, in fact, where Australian men have been the perpetrators. For example, one of our cases involving a client who we call Melinda, she was lured by an Australian man into a situation where she thought she would have a job and be provided for. But in fact, what he did was he raped her every other day for 6 months. And then he took lewd photos of her and he sold them online. The other thing that we see is in our operations in Pampanga, we're seeing increasingly cases of online child sexual exploitation. And in Pampanga itself, not only is the strip of bars in the red light district of all the foreign-owned bars, Australians own the most of those bars.
Is that right?
Yes, in that strip. And on top of that, in these online child sexual exploitation cases, what we see is there are children being abused. They're being abused in their community. Those live sex shows are being directed and paid for and purchased by foreign viewers overseas, and those viewers are in Australia as well. But there is a huge difference. Overseas, the problem in a lot of the countries in which we work, particularly in our region in Southeast Asia, the instances of sex trafficking are very high. And so that's where we're really focused. And we're going to be partnering with IJM to expand and enhance those programs in Southeast Asia and to see that more justice is done for the poor in our region.
Which leads us to our other special guest on Open House this afternoon from IJM in the Philippines, Sam Innocencio. Thank you so much for joining us, literally just off the plane.
That's right.
So you enjoyed the drive out to Open House Studios and have seen very little else.
Well, I love the views. it's quite refreshing indeed.
Paint for us, if you would, the scene for IJM in the Philippines right now.
So IJM in the Philippines has been working with government partners and the NGO community there for 13 years now. I've been working with IJM for 11 years, so nice. It's been quite some time.
Yeah.
And 11 years ago, I remember the time when the police officers were just ignoring the sale of children just across the street from where the police stations are. And then there had been no trafficking convictions at all in the city where we worked. And also, there has been no dedicated aftercare institutions for, you know, sex trafficking survivors. And and also, like, criminals just operate with impunity. So they, you know, sell minors, sell women and girls for profit, and they aren't punished. And so IJM really came at an opportunity where we would like to show that there is hope for these girls, that we can actually strengthen public justice systems to protect the poor. At the end of our project, we were able to show that there has been a 79% reduction in the availability of children or minors sold for sex in the Metro Cebu area, and that's in central Philippines.
Amber, we've spoken at some length about the sex slavery industry, but IJM represents much more than just a rescue organization, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. We deal with different types of violence. We deal with cases of slavery, as well as property and land grabbing off widows and orphans, and child sexual assault and police brutality cases as well. We're not just a rescue organisation. What we do is we partner with local authorities, and part of that is in the rescue operation. But then we ensure that we restore survivors to a place of strength. And then we work with authorities to bring criminals to justice. And as we push those cases through the pipeline, we get to see where it's breaking down. And when we see where it's breaking down, that enables us to design these projects to strengthen the justice system as a whole through training, through advocacy and support in a lot larger ways that have a systemic impact. Our vision is that we rescue thousands, but we protect millions and prove that justice for the poor is possible. So it really has a systemic impact in what we do. And we work across a range of issues because the fundamental similarity between all of them is that the justice system is not protecting its people, and that can apply in a variety of situations.
Sam, can I bring you in here for a moment? It must have been difficult to make those first approaches 11 years ago to your own law enforcement bodies and the government to say, you know what, you're not doing the job here. That's a particularly brave conversation to have. How did that go for you?
Well, yes, it's an interesting conversation every time we go to the police. But we present professionally, you know, documented evidence of abuse and exploitation. And whenever they see that, then they just have to act on it, right? So we want to tell them that, you know, we have this evidence on hand, and, you know, it is your responsibility to really act on it. Because before, they usually see sex trafficking or human trafficking as just a social problem, right? And it's not a criminal heinous offense. And at that time, the anti-trafficking law in the Philippines was quite new, and they didn't really know the elements of the law. So we even have to bring also our law books, the anti-trafficking law, with us, and tell them that this is actually, you know, a sex trafficking crime, and selling of children actually penalizes the perpetrator with life imprisonment. And so they say, oh, really? Yeah, then we got to act on this case then. And then they get to validate that and really see the things that are really happening. And so that's how we actually started working with our law enforcement partners. In that way, they get to listen to us because we have tons of, you know, evidence and analysis to show that these are the things that are actually happening, and we need to address this, you know, by strengthening our public justice systems.
Some people must get pretty nervous when they see your name on a call sheet. I would imagine. Or they see you coming to the office with a briefcase behind you. It can't mean good news.
It's really just about, you know, consistently, you know, going to our partners and working with them closely and just showing that, you know, the work is possible, that it can be, you know, it can be done.
Amber, as we wrap up our conversation, can I ask you to turn the power up on the microscope for a moment? Zoom in on a life that represents the power of what IJM is attempting to do. Can you give us another real-life example of what it means to be free after being discovered in what are abominable circumstances, and then through IJM there is a new sense of hope?
Yeah, I'd love to share Chirito's story with you. Chirito was a young girl. She lived in the rural Philippines, and she was in a very poor family, and she dropped out of primary school actually to help her mother with laundry and babysitting and those kind of jobs. In fact, what happened was she was offered a job by a local to do live-in nannying, but after a while, after a few months, they stopped paying her for that work. And so at that exact time, along came a lady and offered her a job in Cebu, saying, I can get you a good-paying job in a hotel, and your life will be better. And the situation that she's in those situations, people are vulnerable, and she was deceived. And when she actually got to Cebu, she had been trafficked. And in Chirito's words, she was treated like an animal, and she was raped for profit. The police in Chirito's case did intervene, and they did rescue Chirito. And that was just as IJM was setting up its office in Cebu. As IJM found that case, they realized that the prosecution had just languished. Although the perpetrators had been arrested at the time, there'd been no accountability for the offence. And Chirito had gone back to her village, and she was actually living and struggling in quite a lot of shame and trying to recover from the trauma on her own. So IJM social workers found her and wanted to see her restored to a place of dignity and strength, and so convinced her to come back to an aftercare home and put her in a place where she could receive the trauma counselling and all that she needed to recover. At the same time, our lawyers worked with the prosecutors to push the case through the system. And as they did that, it did take a lot of perseverance. It took a lot of faith. It was a lot of hard work. And Chirito, for her, it took a lot of courage, and she testified in that case. And as a result, 6 years later, her perpetrators were convicted. But for Chirito, this is an amazing thing for her life, because, you know, she said to us, "I've been praying all this time that God would grant me justice, and that He has, and this is success." And that has been restoring for her. And at the same time, she's gone to high school. She's now studying social work. She's actually been recently involved in IJM's new mentorship program, the SMART program, where we select individuals to actually mentor other trafficking survivors and other girls who are trying to heal. And she's been selected for that program, and she's now part of it. And what she has said to our staff on the field is that it's because that she was loved that she's now able to love. And for me, that is a story of hope, and that is a story worth trying to replicate. And we want to just do that for so many more people, and we believe we can.
We're going to do something more here. So how can we? What do we do?
Well, firstly, I would just say to learn more about the issues that are out there. And one great way to do that is actually to read about our work in a book called The Locust Effect, Why the End of Poverty Requires the End of Violence. And that's available in bookstores right now. It's by Gary Haugen and Victor Boutros. And it's also available online. And it really gives us a good overview of this kind of work and of the issues. And once we understand the issues too, the other thing that we just hope people will do is get on board with us. We need to build this movement of Australians seeking justice for the oppressed. We need prayer partners. We need financial partners. We need people who are going to give their skill and their resources, just their time and their energy to help us even here in Australia as we do our work, as well as recruiting people to volunteer in the field. And so we're really looking forward to hearing from people and just seeing the response that is out there, because we know that people are passionate about this issue, and so they should be. And we are really looking forward to them contacting us, and they can do that by going to our website, www.ijm.org.au, and getting connected with us.
Sam Innocencio, thank you so much. The Director of Operations for IJM, the International Justice Mission in the Philippines. Thank you, and safe travels.
Thank you.
And Amber Hawkes, Chief Executive of the newly minted IJM Australia. Thank you.
Thanks.